Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Alex, I'm excited to get your take on the latest development tonight and kind of the whole story arc with the Bloodline, but in particular, Jey Uso explaining his decision, and it's kind of what I expected and hoped for, which was not that we're going to get some transformation of who we've come to know Jey to be, and somebody who remains conflicted and not anti-Sammy, but struggling to reconcile his loyalty to his family and his, I think, a sense of affection for Sammy, and try to figure out how to have it all make sense where he doesn't feel too guilty over what he did. But I think he's conveying, not overtly, but conveying a sense that he is conflicted. He is trying to convince himself that it's the only choice he had. It's not the choice he wanted to make, which is telling. It's the choice he had to make because of family. And then, you know, throwing a little blame Sammy's way, saying, you know, if you had just gone with the program, things would be fine. But that isn't saying, you know, I that all along I was faking, I didn't like you, I never liked you, or anything like that. There's still that, if you're hoping for a Jey-Sammy alliance at some point, it didn't seem, this promo, this reaction to what he did on Monday, didn't seem to rule that out. What's your take?
So, to get some of the negative out of the way first, it was very to the point and very expected, but I will be very honest in saying that when the show opened the way that it did, I didn't expect the final segment to be so underwhelming in a way.
Uh-huh.
And I guess I kind of psyched myself out because I made the assumption with the first line of the night was, where's Roman? And I guess I made the assumption stupidly that the altercation would be perhaps between Reigns and Jey. Obviously, that's coming down the road, but for some reason, I lulled myself into thinking that was going to be tonight. So I was a little underwhelmed by the final segment because of the fact that Jey just said what I expected him to say. On the positive side of it, the biggest thing was the angst in his voice, like you just talked about. And the one thing that you didn't hit on was he reiterated multiple times that none of us know what he's going through on a week-to-week basis. Everybody sits at home and says, oh, we love these guys and this and that, and you should do this and you should do that. But no one knows what it's like to be Jey and be in that position. And obviously, he wasn't going to elaborate on that in this segment. It wasn't really the time or the place for it anyway. But that's the underlying factor that's going to play out down the line. And to your point, that's what could come up down the line that ultimately leads to, I don't want to call it his portrayal of the Bloodline because I don't think it'll be a portrayal in that way. But it could lead to his breaking off of the Bloodline, you know, that coupled with the previous breadcrumb line of, I don't give a damn what the tribal chief thinks, and just some of the little breadcrumbs that Jey's left along the way. And it's funny because we talk about all the great actors in this, and Jey, especially recently, is just so good at the little background kind of stuff. And then stuff like this where, like I said, it's the breadcrumbs that are going to lead to the eventual huge split that I would assume Jey is the centerpiece of.
Yeah.
And you mentioned him reuniting with Zayn. I don't necessarily think that when Jey breaks from the Bloodline, it will be to be friends with Zayn. That might just be something that happens as a consequence of the situation. But I don't know if ultimately, much to my chagrin and probably others, that's the case. I've said 100 times that I would personally rather see Jimmy and Solo against Jay and Sami Zayn, just because I think Kevin Owens is a really crappy friend, and I think Jay is a better friend than Kevin Owens is. So I would have rather seen that, but we're well past that at this point. So again, I'm starting to lean towards when Jay does break, Zayn might be involved in something else by the time we get to that point.
Yeah, yeah. I think those are all fair points. Straight from, yeah, the expectations are set higher. I wouldn't call it blatant false advertising or a bait and switch, but the suggestion was there where nobody could be blamed for thinking Reigns was going to be in that final segment. And maybe I'm soft-selling it, maybe I'm being softer on it than I should be. Maybe they were trying to make people – like, they didn't advertise – like, they didn't say constantly, Roman hasn't arrived yet. When will he arrive? He's expected any time. I don't think they did that. But go ahead, yeah.
They did not do that, but when I set up my report, I go to WWE.com, and the picture for SmackDown tonight is Jay rejoins the Bloodline, and Jay's on the left-hand side, and Roman's on the right-hand side.
Yeah, that's something. That's not nothing. I think that's fair criticism, and it's a shame if, in order to try to get ratings, they set people up to expect something and then delivered less than, when the less than on its own is a really good segment. I mean, Jey Uso addresses with Jimmy by his side his decision to turn on Sammy. They could have even said Cody's in the building, because why else would he be there? Like, that's still kind of weird. Did he have another reason to be there other than to run out because the Usos kept dropping his name?
He's a narcissist. Is that a good reason?
Let's not do that. Storyline-wise. Character-wise, too, I guess. As far as Jay's performance and then Jimmy's reaction to it, just talk about the acting, there's that sort of caveat, well, within the context of pro wrestling, because acting in a soap opera is different than acting in a TV murder mystery versus acting in a big screen movie versus acting in a pro wrestling. I mean, there's the context is different. It's kind of like stage in a theater is different than on film for a movie. All of that, all those little caveats aside, I still just want to heap praise on what we're seeing, not just graded on a curve, but if we do just grade it on a curve, it's amazing the level of acting and nuance and interplay that we're getting with Jay. I think it was on a 10 years ago Wade Keller podcast. I was talking about, like, the Usos need to be given more to do. It's the same thing every week, and there's something there that's not being explored, and now it is. And Jimmy wasn't asked to do a lot other than don't distract from Jay. And I know you and I are both typing up a report while this is going on, so we're not just glued to the screen entirely. But I just thought this was another really good performance from Jay with that what's on the surface and then what you can see is beneath the surface. And that's the thing with Jay's character. There's clearly what's on the surface and what's beneath the surface. And they were meeting. Like, they kind of melded a bit at times here, but at other times he's putting up a front. You know, I had to do it for family. Why'd you make that choice, Sammy, to put me in this position? I think there's that layering to his acting that we just don't get in pro wrestling very often. There aren't situations that call for it very often, but man, is he delivering.
No, and that last part is exactly what it is it's the moment where you can tell that he's putting on a brave face for the situation, but in reality, the truth of the matter is that Jay is probably the best actual, like, human being in the Bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he conveys that very well, but like the kid who gives in to peer pressure, that's the situation he's in. And because it's his family, he has to go along with the gang, and the ramifications of turning on them are so much worse for his life away from what we watch on TV.
Yeah.
That he chooses to continue to be with them, even though he's so conflicted and knows all of this is wrong. And you're right. He does a great job of conveying that without all of us having to, you know, look deep, deep into it. Like, it's a shame. I was talking about this with Patrick last night, but I don't know if you've been watching like The Last of Us or any of the HBO Max type shows, but they all those shows now, they give us like the inside the episode after the fact.
Yep.
Like, it's a shame that we can't have that same kind of deal with like Jimmy and Jay after the episode, you know what I mean? And just hear all that kind of insider stuff that we talk about here, just coming straight from the horse's mouth, like we get with Pedro Pascal or whoever else is on the show. Just, it would just be a cool little thing. It's fun to think about.
I like some distance between even watching the show. Like, if I binge a series like Last of Us, and then at the end I go and watch those things or listen to a podcast, I'm good with that. I don't like while I'm watching the show. I like listening to podcasts that review the show from people not involved. But to me, there's a little bit of pulling the curtain away while I'm still in that world that I don't want to do until that world ends. I'm not even crazy about like watching the cast of Succession on Stephen Colbert when almost all of them were on a year or so ago. It's like, I watched it. I can't not watch it. But there's part of me that's like, I don't want to see them getting along like this. I don't want to see them laughing at their characters. I want to think that's a real group of people, even though intellectually I know it's not. I don't want that in my face until the series is over and I kind of let go. So I hope we get that someday. I don't want it now. Like, I didn't even – I'm the one who made the – I think I'm the first – whatever. I don't recall anyone else making the pitch that TNA, when they were doing their pay-per-views, should do post-pay-per-view press conference to different – this was, you know, more than a decade ago – post-pay-per-view press conferences to differentiate themselves from WWE and cater more to the hardcore fans, the insider fans, because they already were – and have the bookers come out, and explain what they think went well, what didn't, what other plans they had. I thought they'd be a selling point for the pay-per-view because they were having, you know, they weren't drawing huge buy rates. Maybe that gets hardcore fans to go, hey, if we get an inside look and we get to hear from the wrestlers and the bookers talking about making the show, what went wrong, changes at the last second, that'd be fascinating. Maybe more people would buy the pay-per-view. So I made a pitch for that. That said, I didn't even like Sammy coming out and, you know, at a post-event presser from WWE and, like, talking about his character. Like, I mean, I know that's done, but I have mixed feelings about that kind of thing. So I think there's a way you can almost go too far pulling the curtain away, and it takes some of the immersion and suspension of disbelief away, and you start thinking about it too meta. Anyway, that's almost neither here nor there, but that's my thought on to a degree on that. I don't know how you feel.
I get where you're coming from, but in this particular case,
yeah,
this is just so different. Like, again, this storyline is more like prestige TV than almost anything else we've gotten.
Yes.
Like, I mean, the last thing that was even remotely close to this, I mean, you could go back to the mega powers exploding to an extent.
Yeah. Yep. People reference that a lot. Yeah. I've heard that before, yeah.
I mean, that's just the only, just the soap opera style of it. And this is even more nuanced than that. And even Jimmy now, like, I was kind of down on Jimmy's acting ability, but over the last, I don't know, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, with the whole thing with Jay going on, even he's kind of stepped up and is a part of this. And, I mean, we haven't even explored what Solo Sikoa really is yet. And,
I know.
You know, and not having him there tonight, I thought was kind of a mistake, but I get why they did that in hindsight.
Well, elaborate on that. Why is it a mistake? Why are you okay with it now?
Well, I'm okay with it now because clearly they were setting up the two-on-two with Cody and Sammy and them being able to get the upper hand with the weird moment of Cody raising Zayn's hand like he's the one that should – anyway.
Yeah.
And if Solo's there with how Solo's portrayed as an unstoppable force, if the two of them come out on top against the three of them, it looks bad. So in hindsight, I get why they didn't have Solo there.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. I you know, Paul Heyman did an interview with, well, I think it was SI. I hate to not give proper credit, but he was talking about, you know, how the ideas go. You know, he gets ideas pitched to him, he pitches them to Roman, and he gave credit to the main writer on SmackDown for his contributions and all that. And I know that's done. I mean, I'm not like going to be so old school, like, oh no, you know, people want to insulate themselves from that. That's fine. But there is a little bit about this being so good. I can imagine they want to talk about the creative process and they love the attention. You know, Heyman especially is going to do, you know, interviews on this, maybe Sammy too a bit. But yeah, there's just something to leaving the mystery there until we're done. That kind of like, remember Todd Martin making the point that like when Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega had a big match at the Tokyo Dome, and that's like they're on a podcast days later talking about planning the match and all this, you know, they're planning of the match and the moves, and it's like no, like let's let a few years go by before we pull the curtain back that much on it. It hasn't fully settled, but you know, teach their own. I understand it's very subjective, and there's even advantages. There's incentive to do that kind of thing to get publicity, and if you aren't willing to talk in that way, you're unlikely to get offers to do media if you're going to just kayfabe or, you know, not really give specifics. So, but how many storylines can we even have this debate, you know, where it's like you're shattering something so immersive by talking about it openly while it's going on? Like most things in wrestling, it doesn't matter. You know, this is one of those things that maybe Jericho Omega to a degree did, but in a very different way. So that's a credit to this that I'm sort of like wanting to, you know, retreat into, you know, not retreat, but stay in sort of the fantasy land that they create, the fictional universe they create, and not be jarred out of it too explicitly. And comparing, I'm sure they're flattered being compared to Succession, because that show's fantastic. Okay, well, let's pause. Let's introduce the show, and we'll get on to more on this with our callers and emails, and also more topics from the show, some WrestleMania developments, a Hall of Fame announcement, and more. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, March 10th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of many podcasts, some VIP exclusive, like the Wade Keller Hotlines, which provide insider news updates, analysis of headlines, detailed rundowns of the major TV shows, and the return of the Ask the Editor version of the Wade Keller Hotline every Wednesday at PW Torch VIP. So go VIP to hear the Wade Keller Hotlines, plus our post pay-per-view roundtables, including this past Sunday night. Todd Martin, Rich Fan, and I spent an hour talking about the AW Revolution pay-per-view just for VIP members on the VIP podcast feed. And we'll be doing the same thing both nights of WrestleMania coming up in just a couple weeks. It's crazy how fast it's coming up. And also the weekly signature shows like The Fix with Todd Martin that I host and Everything with Rich Fan that I host. And there's so many other cool VIP exclusive shows. Check out details at pwtorch.com/go VIP. Now's a great time to sample being a VIP member. I think if you enjoy this approach to our coverage here on the free shows, I think you'll really like all that we do throughout the week for our VIP members. Plus, there's a library of 20 years of podcasts and a decade of hundreds of retro radio shows from the 90s and over 1,800 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. A lot of history to catch up on with our approach to covering it. So we invite you and encourage you to support us with a VIP membership. The other voice you hear on today's post show is Alex McDonald. He covers SmackDown every Friday night at pwtorch.com. His reports run alongside mine. And he and the aforementioned Patrick Moynihan also host a free podcast on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, looking at a Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter back issue from our huge library of back issues that VIP members have access to all the time on demand. It is called the PW Torch 90s Passcast. Alex, welcome back. It seems like it's been a long time since we did a show together.
It has. I actually just saw before we got on here, it was October. So it's been a while, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Like almost a half a year. It's crazy. Because I know you got busy around the holidays. And then when you have been able to host, it's been Zach filling in for me as host. So great to have you back. I'm looking forward to talking more about this show with you. Tell people a little bit more about what you do with Patrick every week.
Oh, me and Patrick do a great show here on the Torch, the PW Torch 90s Passcast. The last couple weeks, a little somber, covering the death of Kerry Von Erich. But last week's show, we did cover Super Brawl 3, so there's a little break from the sadness with some of that at the end. Obviously, we're in the beginning stages of Monday Night Raw, on top of the resignation of Bill Watts in WCW and the newfound power of Eric Bischoff. We're going to be exploring that more as the year 93 goes on. Obviously, WrestleMania 9 review is coming up in a couple weeks. And for those that listen to this show, you will be very interested this week because I have a very special message for Cody Rhodes on behalf of my tribal chief that we will be doing this week on the show as well.
Oh, fun. I look forward to it. So to gain access to that show, it's super easy. On your podcast app, search PW Torch. You'll see the PW Torch Daily Cast logo pop up. It's got a bunch of colors on it, colors representing each of the different shows throughout the week. There's a different show with different hosts with a different theme every day of the week. It is free. It's our longest running free podcast. And you are 10 seconds away from being a subscriber. And you can catch up on back episodes of the 90s podcast too, which are pretty evergreen in nature. So search PW Torch while you're at it. You'll also see a logo pop up for the PW Torch VIP sample feed. You can subscribe to that free and get some samples of VIP shows. And that also, if you're on the Apple Podcast app and you have an Apple account, which you do if you have an iPhone, you can actually upgrade to receive our VIP podcast feed with these shows with all the ads and plugs removed and then all the VIP exclusive shows I talked about. You can actually just use your Apple account to do that with just a click and it'll, you know, verify you with a fingerprint or face recognition or whatever. But it's super frictionless to suddenly have access to all our VIP shows on one feed and the ad-free versions of the free shows, the Daily Cast and Wade Keller shows. So if you're on an iPhone, on a podcast app, and you have $10 to spare per month and you want a streamlined listening experience and all our new VIP shows, that is the easiest, quickest way to go about it. And you can do that right within that app. Suddenly that app will expand. Instead of just a free sample, a few times a month, you're going to get the whole array of all the VIP shows. So, and you get a 3-day trial to kick the tires and see if you like it. You can cancel. We hope you don't, but you can cancel within 3 days and not be charged at all. So that was something new we introduced last year. And I think it's a real cool option if you're very into our podcast. All right. Plugs out of the way. Let's get to conversation about SmackDown, and we will give out the phone numbers now. If you're listening to us live, we've got a bunch of people who have called in and haven't pushed one yet. You are invited to join the conversation. If you haven't pushed one yet, push one, and we'll get to you. Otherwise, you can still call also. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad to flag you on our switchboard. The other way to participate in the show is by email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right. Let's get to some calls here. We also, by the way, are going to have Javier Machado, PW Torch VIP member, on with a roundtable discussion on SmackDown coming up in a bit. I'm eager to get his thoughts on the Jay and Jimmy segment tonight, too, and the latest with Cody. Maybe I'll have some nice things to say about Austin Theory, too. Alex, where are you on Austin Theory? What do you think about him?
Love him. We actually did a little quite a while ago now on the show. But we did a quick segment about three wrestlers we would have taken from back then and three we would take now to build a company around, but they can't have been world champion yet. And at the time, I actually chose Austin Theory, Solo Sikoa, and MJF. So I love Austin Theory. I think he has a huge upside, huge bright future. I love the thought process of him against Cena. And I just think there's unlimited tap potential there. And kind of spoiling how I feel about something else, but I would not be totally opposed to maybe a face turn for him down the line or in a Roman face turn situation if he's the guy they go with. But anyway. Mm-hmm.
I know people in that company who are saying he's going to be a future WrestleMania main eventer, and they love his attitude, they love his learning curve, they love his thirst for knowledge and his professionalism and how much he's matured in the last few years, and his athleticism and his instincts. You know, people whose opinions I respect in this business like him a lot. And going back to NXT, even there's people I knew there who are like, yeah, I mean, you're gonna get mixed signals from different people about him, but keep an eye on him. I'm with you. I bring this up because Todd Martin on The Fix yesterday gave me a hard time and sort of almost laughed at the notion that, like, I'd compare Austin Theory and MJF as, you know, two valuable heels of the future. And, you know, with the, I wouldn't even say implication, the overt case being that they're not in the same league, and it's kind of silly to bring them up in the same sentence. So Todd's going to be a hard time about that. And but, I mean, we have fun with different people who are our favorites, and the others aren't as crazy about. So I ran a poll on Twitter, and we asked, based on what you've seen of Austin Theory so far, what is he showing signs of eventually being in WWE? And the four options they gave was main event WWE star, solid upper mid-carder, mid-card at best, and won't even last in WWE. 30% think he's on course to be a main event WWE star. And you can interpret that as, well, that's a course he's on, but he's getting overpushed. But I think the spirit of the question is, you know, does he seem like that's where he will land? And 46% say solid upper mid card, and only 20% say mid card at best. So, you know, pretty good returns in terms of people optimistic about him. But you know, that 46% saying solid upper mid-carder does indicate he's still got to win some people over, Alex. Like, you and I are a fan. I know Javier Machado's a fan of his and think he's likely headed on a trajectory towards being a main eventer and perhaps a WrestleMania main eventer. But I do think he's still got to prove something to people whose opinions I also respect who don't see that in him yet. What do you say to that?
First of all, on the Todd side, I usually agree with Todd, and I've heard a lot of those conversations, and I just think he's dead wrong about Theory. And I haven't heard this week's yet, but as far as Theory and MJF go, I wouldn't be shocked if one of them is a face and they main event WrestleMania against each other.
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
Dead serious. Yeah. I could definitely see that. And again, I would throw Sokoa into that mix too, with the possibility of him against one of them also. Anyway, as far as Theory goes, the thing that people have to be shown is some of the booking of him. And the problem with him right now is they're teetering the line where it's almost like they can't decide if he's going to be the next Honky Tonk Man or if he's going to be the next Triple H. And what I mean by that is they have him win in these weird, fluky ways. And you can get away with that to an extent, mm-hmm. but you have to be careful because if you do it too much, then he's the Honky Tonk Man. If you do it in a way where he narrowly escapes with his title, but he did win, then he's Triple H and Ric Flair. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where the booking has to come in and help him a little bit. And I think, unfortunately, that's not all him. And with that being the case, I can understand where people are kind of on the fence because, like I said, continuing in certain ways could hurt him. And again, stuff like Monday with Cena, I don't think that buries him in any way. But if there's not some, I don't know, response from that, then that could hurt him in the long run.
Yes, agreed. If we have time, we'll talk more about that segment. But I want to stick here to SmackDown. I thought of bringing him up because I know Javier's a fan, and I know Sean from Murphy's Bro is also a fan of Theory, and I saw them pop up on the switchboard here. So I was like, well, maybe we'll get into that a little bit, depending on how long we go with SmackDown here. Again, we've got a lot more to explore in SmackDown. So actually, let's go with the aforementioned Sean from Tennessee up first here. Sean, welcome to the show. Do you want to start with any Austin Theory comments before we talk SmackDown?
Yeah, well, I want to say it was hard when Todd was just burying the poor guy. No, he wasn't burying him. But, I mean, he was just saying, you know,
kinda.
He was. I'm just with you. I think Theory – yeah, I thought Theory would say – like, okay, go back to the promo on Raw real fast. Like, I think – he had a couple good heel lines, but I wish, you know, he would have said more. Now, granted, I think there's more to tell with the two of them going in because Cena's supposedly supposed to be on Raw a few more times going into WrestleMania. So I think Theory's going to have a chance to dress him down even more. But the only thing I didn't like about Theory in that segment was I wish Theory would have been more heel overall. I wish he would have, like, not saying he couldn't have said, I respect you, John, but, like, just went after him more. I thought he should have been more heelish, you know, just go after him, just, you know, abuse him a little bit more, you know, kind of come at him a little bit more, where he's just kind of like, oh, I respect you. I'm going to give you a match you want at WrestleMania. It's kind of like, Theory, that's not what you've been portrayed here lately to be. You've been this kind of nasty heel, this, you know, I'm a confident in myself heel, and I didn't see a lot of that. But I've seen so much of that to where I'm just a big fan of where he's been going. Like, I think the trajectory's been so high, and his promos have been very good. And he's had really good matches, like the matches with him and Rollins. I saw one live. It was really, really good. He can go in the ring. Now, I'm worried that Cena might lower him down in the ring just because I don't think Cena is practicing his ring development a lot, and he hasn't been in the ring for a long time. So, I mean, the match could be bad, but I don't think it'll be because of Austin. I think it'll be because of Cena. But I like where Theory's going. I'm very high on him. I think he's main event material. Everything I've seen promo-wise and ring-wise, I love him. And I think he could be a great babyface going forward, too, like you were bringing up. I think face is very much in his future. I just think he's doing a good job as a heel. But I'm totally sold. So, sorry, Todd.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
Like
that's all right. Go ahead, John. Let's switch back down.
Yeah, no, as far as SmackDown, I don't know what you guys also talked about. I did just get in, you know, kind of came in. I was a little late. I had to pause. I was through the show until I got to the Jay part, which I'm like, I was actually on my phone with one of my best friends, and I was like, I need to get to the Jay segment. I got to figure this out. What's going on here? With the Jay segment, it was fine. It was good. I mean, it wasn't great, but it was good. I mean, he had, just basically said, he's not family and, you're not blood and, you're being selfish, which, again, I love that Sammy had brought up previously when he was talking to Jimmy about how, you guys kept having to make me jump hoops. Like, how is that me being selfish? Like, that's me trying to show you how much I cared about, you guys and wanted to get in. So, but that's a good heel line. Like, it was good. So have you guys talked about that segment in particular? Did you guys talk about that at the beginning?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but I thought it was fine. I wanted to talk about the Charlotte Rhea promo. I wanted to kind of bring that up. I mean, it was quick.
I'm curious to talk about that. That was.
Yeah. The match itself, just going back to that, like it was not a good match. Shotzi, I think there's something there with Shotzi. I just don't think she's really developed much in the ring. The last match she had in the tag match she was in was a little bit better. This one just felt very clunky to me. Charlotte, I like that the Hatter said, hey, I want to have some matches before WrestleMania. Like, she was – her and Adam backstage I thought was good. Trying to really build that kind of face persona, which she's trying to build right now, and it was fine. But the promo – it was good. I don't even know. I'm kind of torn. Like, it was fine. I think they need to give them more promo time. We need to see these ladies go at each other. And I think we finally got some of that tonight. Rhea's promo was very good as far as she's coming off as a star. I just want to know what you guys thought about it. Cause I was kind of,
yeah,
it wasn't enough to really go on, but it was fine. It was fine.
Yeah. I praised it in my report. I thought it was straightforward. It was refreshingly not meta. It was just Charlotte saying, you say you're getting better, but I get better every day too. Some people like me for that. Others don't. I can live with that. Ripley trying to get into her head, Charlotte holding her own. It just kind of felt like something two MMA fighters might say to each other, that happened before, but I'm getting better. And then the veteran going, well, I'm getting better too. It wasn't overly cute. Alex, what do you think?
You liked it a lot more than I did. It was fine, but there was the weird, awkward pause that Charlotte had. I don't know if she forgot what she was supposed to say or didn't know where to go next, but she had like this really odd pause in the middle of everything she was saying. So that didn't help. And it was just... it was a little too cookie cutter for me. Like I much preferred the dynamic. I don't remember if it was last week or the week before where Dominic was just kind of, in Charlotte's face and saying all these nasty things. And Charlotte was retorting to him, but Ripley was just kind of standing there like a badass. Like, you can talk all you want, Charlotte, but at WrestleMania, I'm taking your belt. And I think I just preferred that framing of the situation. And I thought they were going to continue with that tonight. Like, Ripley just came out in the middle of the match and just stood there and watched and stood there and watched. And I thought that would have been fine. Like, mm-hmm. I almost wish that Ripley had just kind of clapped and walked off. And I know that's not what everybody wants to see, but at this point, just what they did tonight didn't hit for me. It wasn't bad. There was nothing that was bad about it. It just isn't what I'm looking for. And to your point, Sean, if we're going to get more interview time with them, I almost wish they would do some sort of like a sit down. Like, you remember the Austin Rock one from Mania 17 with Jim Ross? I almost wish we would get something similar to that, where they can just kind of sit there and air their grievances, not necessarily at each other, but with a mediator. I don't know. I feel like that would work better for them, because that tonight, it was just, again, not bad, but very cookie cutter and just not overall super satisfying.
Yeah. Like, I guess what one aspect that I liked is that Rhea Ripley was thrown into the main roster. And I know I heard that she was pretty overwhelmed. You know, I mean, it was like she was insecure, like, you know, if she was ready, and there was a lot, just a lot of expectations, and there was a feeling she was coming up short in some ways and wasn't ready. It's just like, and so watching her just step out there, look at Charlotte and say, I look at you and see your insecurities, and I'm going to take the thing that makes you feel important. Like, I think people would relate to that, or they would think that would – Charlotte portrays herself as if that championship means everything, and she verifies that with how she talks. And for Ripley to just stand right in her face and say, I can look through this facade that you put on of confidence and see your insecurities. And then in the end, for Charlotte to say, you can tear through everyone but me, part of it is like, it's so refreshing to hear that instead of what Cena did to Theory. You know, which is, you know,
I mean,
I had all kinds of issues with Cena and Theory. I still think, you know, and I'll stand by it, even though Todd sort of mocked it, that Theory standing opposite of Cena didn't feel ridiculous. Like, what's this guy doing standing in – this guy's not ready to face Cena at WrestleMania. Like, the criticism of Theory is, oh, maybe he's overpushed. Maybe he won't be a big centerpiece act like some people think. And I don't know if he's proven himself to me yet like some other people feel like he has. I get that. That's fine. But I don't hear people going, why is he even standing in the ring with Cena? Cena should be against someone who's a bigger deal. Like, it's not that Lesnar or Moss reaction. Like, he's reached that level. And he stood there. And I do think sort of there's that eye test of, does this person look like they think they belong? And granted, Theory is going to be subservient to Cena and his stature, even though, you know, I'm not and never have been a fan of Cena's meta, you know, promos. And there's times where I just think Cena's belief in how the business operates is so different than mine. And I think his approach is so wrong so often, you know, that, you know, I don't know. It's frustrating to me. This segment wasn't any of that. It was just Charlotte building up her opponent, saying, you can beat anyone but me, and Ripley looking her in the eye and going, I'm going to take this thing that I know is important to you, that you say is important to you. And so, yeah, just it rang a little – it felt authentic to me, even if it wasn't just bursting with charisma. And, you know, a moment of – you know, like you said, kind of a moment of awkwardness. So, anyway, I mean, not segmented here or anything like that, but I definitely – I think I liked it better than you, Alex.
Yeah, you definitely –
Oh, go ahead, Alex, yeah.
You definitely – the one thing that would have helped from my standpoint is they both made the utterance about getting better, but they never mentioned why that matters. And the reason it matters is because they've already done this. And I really wish that Ripley would bring up what you said, Wade, not from the meta sense of I was brought up to the main roster and I wasn't ready. Not that. But from the wrestling sense of I was put in a match with you, you were better than me, but you're not better than me anymore, and I'm going to prove it. And she doesn't say that. They, like, vaguely allude to it, but they don't come out and say it because everybody's so afraid to mention that WrestleMania happened. And the truth is, that was one of the best women's matches of the year that year. I loved the first time. I'm super excited to see them work with each other.
Yep.
I just want them to say that, yeah, you think this is going to be an easy task, Charlotte, because you've done this already, but you have no idea what I am now. And there wasn't any of that.
Yeah. I think there's more to do. I hope we get more. We've got, you know, a couple more SmackDowns. Maybe we, you know, and maybe it'll be a sit-down format, split-screen format, you know, someone sitting between them, whatever. Maybe we can explore some of that stuff more. But this, this was had an absence of negatives and enough positives for me to give the segment a thumbs up. I tend to like the current Charlotte character more than most people in terms of her finding a way to not be a pandering babyface, but also dropping some of the stuff that I thought didn't work for her when she was trying to be a babyface, but was still heelish. And I think she's dropped, you know, sort of the robotic queen stuff. She's almost not robotic anymore. And about 70% of the queen stuff that she leaned on so much is gone. And there's still some of it there, but I feel like she's loosening up and showing a little bit more of who she is as a grown woman now than just a cartoon, you know, just sort of this one-dimensional cartoonish character going through certain motions. I think there's been improvement there, and I think that came through in this form, in this segment for me too. Sean, let me throw back to you. Definitely want to get your thoughts.
Yeah, I like what, well, first of all, Alex, good to talk to you, man. How are you, sir?
You too, Sean. Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, man. Going back to what you said, and that's what I thought going into this feud. I was like, okay, you have that history. Go back to that history. Get into that history. I know it's the pandemic, WrestleMania. Who cares? The match itself was great. Build off of that. Go back to that story. Talk about that. So they did it initially a little bit, and they got away from that. They need to get back to that. So I'm with you, Alex, on that. But the segment was fine for what it was tonight. And it showed about the women's division, just kind of harping on that real quick. There's no intrigue when Charlotte's like, I want a match, and Adam Pearce is like, I'll give you a match. There's no intrigue. There's no like, oh, I'm really dying to see who it is, because you just know any one of those women that come out have unfortunately either aren't big enough as stars or they just haven't been booked very well. Either one. I just want to bring that up too. Going back to the Ray, number one, Ray in the Hall of Fame, just – first of all, what an amazing – I mean, nobody more deserving of a WWE, quote-unquote, Hall of Fame than Rey Mysterio. I mean, the guy has just had an amazing career. You know, we got to praise everything he's done. I mean, just fantastic in the ring, on the mic, just everything. And I love what they did tonight. They had him come out. He's going to start to talk. Yep, they interrupt. I love that. The stuff with Dom, you know, the match was good. It was a good match. It was a solid match. And then – I just love the Dom Ray interaction. You are just excited for when Ray's going to finally sock him in the mouth, getting ready for WrestleMania. And I'm invested. What did you guys think of the match, the segment, just everything with Ray and Dom? It's just been great. I've loved every bit of it.
Yeah, it continues to be fun. Ray got the prop. What's the word? The typical treatment with a center of the ring interview where he gets interrupted in the first or second sentence. That's sort of a tradition, you know, when Ray's standing mid-ring, and we got it this time with Dom interrupting. It was a nice video, nice sound bites from, you know, some big names talking about Ray. Do you know right off, Alex or Sean, how many people have been inducted in the Hall of Fame while they were still, like, active full-time wrestlers, not just, you know, occasional special attractions?
At least not many.
Yeah, it's, you know, and part of that is they just have fewer to choose from, but part of it might be the set, you know, being out on the West Coast and wanting to do it there. And part of it could be, hey, we got the storyline going. This will add to it. Alex, what do you think about Ray being inducted at this point this year, given the context of everything? And then what do you think of the content today with Dominic and Ray?
If Ray gets beat and retired by Dominic, I'm fine with it. If that's not the case and we watch Rey Mysterio matches for another 3 or 4 years, then I'm not super cool with it. It sounds bad, but that's just kind of where I'm at with the Hall of Fame thing. I feel like we're getting to the point now where everybody and their brother's in this thing and they're running out of the big, big names. And if you're not going to headline the one in Los Angeles with, you know, the million actors you have in this company, then maybe we just should do it. And I like Ray. I like Ray a lot, and he deserves it. But the problem with inducting him right now is on television for the last, I don't know, 3 years, he's treated as an afterthought. So that's still fresh in your mind versus the legacy that he's built.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of a problem. Like, I just wish that they would give some time to breathe for some of this stuff, because right now, if you're like, okay, I'm in my 30s. So the first time I saw Rey Mysterio, I was like 6 years old, right? To me, he's a legend because I grew up watching Rey Mysterio. Whether you want to talk about the bad stuff with the horns and no mask and all that stupid kind of stuff, or, you know, winning the Royal Rumble and all the good stuff, right? But if you're a new fan and you're 10 years old, you think Rey Mysterio is like a joke mid-carter. So it makes the Hall of Fame kind of look like a joke. If you put some distance in between those two things, I think it really, really helps.
Yeah, yeah. I think the video and the way they talk about him is it's an opportunity to kind of educate people on what his, you know, what his career has meant. I think you can catch people up pretty quick. My going back to your original point too, my philosophy on Hall of Fame is like, I don't think anyone should get in Hall of Fame until like they're 60 years old. I'm overstating it a little, but like to me, the Hall of Fame is when you've had time to reflect on their prime, and you also have a knowledge of, did they hurt their prime? You know, and I'm thinking of sports athletes too, you know, by sticking around too long or saying something wrong or not conducting themselves professionally or admirably in retirement. Like, there's so many things, like for me, in an idealistic scenario for a Hall of Fame for pro sports and pro wrestling, it's sort of something that I think it should come to you after you've been retired for a few years, or at least retired from full-time, you know, activity. I mean, in pro wrestling, you know, there's going to be people coming back in their, you know, late 40s and into their 50s, where you don't want to just rule out putting them in the Hall of Fame. But, like, the minimum age was 45. I would be okay with that. And if there was, you know, you had to be and have no more than 3 matches a year for 3 years before you'd be inducted, I'd be good with that too. And I mean, I know there's other reasons that they go with people for the Hall of Fame at the time that they do, where it's more about, you know, money and marketing and eyeballs and stuff like that. But in a perfect world, I think the Hall of Fame, any Hall of Fame, should be after somebody's retired. Sean, let me throw it back to you for any follow-up on any of that.
Yeah, those are all fair points. I mean, I didn't think about that initially. I mean, I guess my first thought was they're going to put them in the Hall of Fame just to keep the story going the way they're telling the story, I guess, in a way. But I'm with you as far as I'd rather them be not wrestling anymore, honestly, and then them go in if they're going to do it that way. I just would rather them wait a while. And then, like you said, and that was a fair point, Alex, because, again, I mean, they have portrayed him in a – you know, I mean, he's in a good storyline right now. But, I mean, overall, yeah, like him getting pushed around, it just makes him look – I mean, even though you know why he's not fighting back, it's still – you know, there's still people that might think, oh, he looks kind of weak right now. He's not wanting – but it's like, dude, it's his son. He's not beating him up because it's his son. But eventually he's just going to – you know, so I like the story with – you know, it's weird. But, Ray deserves it, but, yeah, I would have rather them waited, you know, a few years, obviously, when he's done. But I'm just loving what they're doing with Dom. He's just done such a good heel. I mean, and Wade, when you brought it up a long time ago, I was like, I don't know. You know, I think he can be. I mean, he can't be any worse than he was when he first came in. But I just thought he's done such a great job. But then going back to the first part of the show, which I wanted to kind of get your real feedback on too, and I'll leave it with you guys here, but. With the, you know, Fatal 5-Way, which, again, I don't like Fatal 5-Ways. I'm not a fan. The match was fine. Here's my, I guess, dilemma. Not really a dilemma, but my thought is, if you're ultimately going to go with Gunther going to the back and saying, oh, I just want a singular challenger, which that's what I want, and I think most people want, even though, yes, Gunther, Sheamus, Drew would be fine. If you're going to do one, yes, that would be the best one to do. Don't have that finish at the beginning, and then Gunther just be like, well, I just want one challenger. And Adam's like, yes, I'm going to make that happen. I'm going to have Drew and Sheamus fight each other for the 800th time, and then the winner of that's going to go on to face you. It's like, I just don't like how they got there. What do you guys think about that segment altogether, the match, the finish, which I didn't like, and then to get where they ultimately got? And Wade, like I said, Todd, I'll forgive Todd for saying what he did about Theory, but I still don't like it. I'm still not a fan. But I appreciate the fix. I love the fix. I love everything you guys do for VIP. And you got to go VIP if you don't. You're crazy. And Wade, I wanted to say too, I you bring it up whenever you talk about Jason from Australia when he was on back in the day, and I do miss him as well. I know we might never get to hear from him again on the phone, but I do always love hearing him when he was the co-host, when he was on calls. I always enjoy it. So, Alex, appreciate you guys. Appreciate you guys taking my calls always.
I miss Jason from Australia, too. I think we are, you know, he's showing up frequently as a caller and a co-host on our flashback shows. And if you're listening, Jason, let us know. Let us know you're okay and how things are going. I haven't heard from him in a while. I know he kind of fell out of watching WWE, I think primarily during COVID, but it might have been related to some other things, too. And anyway, but yeah, I always wonder where people go when after we hear from them for the last time. I feel like there should be like a sign-out form if you're going to disappear on us and tell us you're leaving and where you're going or something. Alex, Drew and Sheamus, do you think it does end up being a one-on-one match, or do you think something happens next week and Adam Pearce throws up his hands and says it's going to be, you know, a triple threat? Not because it's the best match or anything like that, but just because they want to get both Sheamus and Drew on WrestleMania in a meaningful match.
You stole my thunder a little bit, because I was going to tell Sean I have some really, really bad news for him, because next week is going to be a non-finish.
Yeah.
Like, 1,000% that's where this is going. And I even wrote in my report, I really wish they had just settled it immediately. Like, the second both of the referees counted, Adam Pearce should have ran down and made a decision right then. Yeah. Dragging that on was really dumb, and it makes your announcers look really, really stupid when they sit there and question who won. And not only that, but, 2 minutes after the fact, they're hyping an A&E show instead of talking about the fact that the opening match didn't have a winner, when the winner is going to be in a major match at your biggest show of the year. Like, the whole thing just looks so discombobulated and stupid. And then they do throw back to it, and it's just McIntyre and Sheamus arguing in the dressing room. And then they cut away from that. And then a half hour later, we have Gunther, who is this unstoppable force, who in reality wouldn't care if he had to wrestle 17 people. And he says he wants one challenger. Like, the whole thing was completely disjointed, and they're going to make it even worse by having these two guys wrestle each other for the 1,000th time, and there's going to be no finish for probably, I don't know, 700 of those 1,000 times, and we're going to end up with what we could have gotten in 30 seconds after the match was over tonight.
Is there something about, like, to me, Gunther saying, I want one challenger, is sort of a babyface promo, because, like, this is a sport that should test one person against one person, not me against two people at once, where I could lose my title and not be involved in the finish, which is one of the reasons I don't think there should ever be a title at stake in a triple threat match. That is not a feature. That is a flaw, WWE, that a champion can lose a title without being involved in pin or submission. And maybe Gunther's just being a purist and also a little bit of a heel going, you know, I don't want my odds to drop. But it's, I don't think there's, like, because his gimmick is that he's this wrestling purist and the ring is sacred, well, part of being sacred, if you're going to make that your gimmick should be triple threat matches and fatal four ways, are stupid. And I don't want any part of them, especially with a title on the line. So, I mean, if that's why he's saying that, and he is a heel, he's not a badass babyface, so you can play it two ways. He's a purist, or he's a heel who doesn't want his odds to go down, and he wants one-on-one so his odds don't go down. That's also reasonable slash perhaps could be framed as cowardly, because certainly if Drew was a champion, you know, he'd be scripted to say, and he'd naturally on his own probably say, bring him on. I'll take on one. I'll take on two. I'll take on three. Bring on the top contenders. I'll prove myself. And that would also be kind of dumb, because, you know, you're proving yourself in a one-on-one match. That's what title matches should be, one-on-one or two-on-two. But still, you know, you'd understand him as a babyface being scripted to say that, or you know, told to say that. So with Gunther, I'm okay with it. I actually am way more okay with it being a triple threat than I should be, because I feel like a huge hypocrite. But I do think if you were to do a triple threat, having Sheamus, Drew, and Gunther in the ring all at once, just chopping the hell out of each other and having, yes, a banger, given the type of year or two that Drew and Sheamus have had and the physical matchup that they are for Gunther, and yes, it's WrestleMania, and you don't have to put everybody on the show, but I don't know that there's a spot for Sheamus if it's Drew and Gunther one-on-one. while it's not my first choice, I'm not hostile towards the concept like I normally am in this situation.
No, and I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm okay with it. On the Gunther thing, it's funny you bring up him coming across like a babyface, because I've been saying for a while that I don't understand how he is a heel, because like you have him opposite the New Day, and he's talking about how everything they do is ridiculous, and he respects wrestling and is the ring general wants to bring prestige to the title. And I just write in my report, like, okay, sign me up for more of this guy. This is the, like, most realistic, cool person on the roster. How is he a bad guy?
Yep.
Like, and the thing is, like, you could use, like, oh, well, he has cronies. Well, his cronies don't ever help him win. Like, yeah. So he's just a likable guy who has friends. Like...
Yeah,
he has more friends than Drew McIntyre does. So who's the babyface here? But anyway, with that out of the way, as far as the triple threat goes, I'm fine with it. I will say, to the point of the title changing hands, I think it's a huge tell for the main event if Gunther loses without being pinned. And the reason I say that is because if Gunther loses without being pinned, that might telegraph that Cody's winning.
Explain that.
Well, they already had the altercation in the Rumble, and the truth is, and I'm going to get blasted for this, but the truth is it's going to be a huge challenge to make Cody not look secondary to whoever is facing Reigns after the fact. So you're going to need a big time, probably a first time challenger of somebody who's been very protected. So if Gunther loses the title without getting pinned, he's still very protected. And instead of him going through a series of rematches to get his title back, as a heel, he could set his sights on Cody and they could build to something for either that big show in Puerto Rico or the Money in the Bank that's across the pond, which would be huge with Gunther in there. Or possibly even SummerSlam. It would just make a lot of sense to go in that direction if they intend to keep Gunther, clean between now and then.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. All right, Sean, any closing words from you?
Well, I did want to say, Wade, I just wanted to be funny. I was actually on the chat with Zach, and I think it was just Zach on the YouTube channel. And it was funny because Mike hasn't been on in a while. And why have you not had him on in a while, Wade? Come on now. And
he
was on.
I love Mike. And I'll just say that I love Mike when he's on the show. And he just said he needed to take a break from being on a Friday night. So I should check in with him to see if that has changed.
Gotcha. And he was in the chat. And I don't know. I thought it was funny. Wade, this is no slight on you at all. This is just hilarious. I did bring up, I told him, I said, man, Mike, how are you doing? And Wade's not using my jingle anymore. How dare he? How dare he? And he just laughed. Is like, I've noticed that too. He just laughed. I just thought it was funny. But no, you don't have to play my jingle. I get why you don't. Javier deserves the only jingle, and he deserves it. He's the man. And where has he been? Is he just working crazy? Because I know he hadn't been on here lately. I figured he's been working a lot, assuming.
Yeah, last time he was on, he said he's been working a lot. But he is on hold. So we'll have a Javier segment coming up here.
Awesome. Glad. No, thanks for taking my call, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. All right, our number, if you're still live streaming our show, the number is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. Feel free to join the conversation. Don't worry if you miss the beginning of the show. Push 1 when you call. That flags you on our switchboard. We will go soon to Javier, but first we'll go to Mike in Atlantic City. Mike, good to hear from you. What's in your mind about SmackDown tonight?
I thought it was a good, solid show. Not as good as last week, but it was still good. I'm with you, Alex. I think the ending was kind of flat, like kind of underwhelming. I think I was expecting Reigns to be on the show. I thought they advertised Reigns for the show. Didn't they advertise him for the show?
Talked about that earlier, that he was in the graphic. I mean, I haven't it hasn't crossed my mind, Alex, that maybe he was supposed to be there and for some reason couldn't make it. Do you think, Alex, do you think the advertising was so overt that that's a possibility?
No, I never would have even known that was a thing had I not gone to the website. And I'll be honest, I only visit the website on Fridays to set up the report. So I never would have known. Like, if I wasn't writing the report, I never would have had any idea, and I never would have thought anything of it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, but yeah, the Cody Rhodes Reigns match, I'm really excited for WrestleMania. I think it's going to be a great match. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think I'd rather see that now than I would Sami versus Reigns. I know at one point I was leaning more towards, I wanted Sami Zayn versus Reigns at Mania. But I guess since now that I've seen it at the Chamber, maybe that's why, like, I'm definitely more for Cody versus Reigns now. You know, it's a fresh match, and I think it's going to be really good. And it's definitely not predictable. The match can go either way. You know, I think we're going to have a lot of fun spots in the match, like when Cody gets speared, is he going to kick out? And if Cody does beat Reigns, like, how many crossroads does he have to hit on Reigns in order for him to get the pin? I think it's going to be very exciting. I think I'm leaning more towards Cody to win. I think it depends if Reigns is going to take time off after Mania. Have you heard anything, Wade, about him taking time off after Mania, Reigns? And if he is,
And the last thing that I want is to leak out that Reigns is taking time off after WrestleMania, because that will take away from the watching the match and not knowing the finish. But certainly,
right.
If he does, that would make sense if he loses to go away for a while, because the anticipation for his return would be great. Although, there'd be a big void in the programming if that were the case.
Yeah, and who do you think would go over in the match? Do you think Cody's going to go over, or do you think Reigns? I'm leaning more towards Cody, I think, at this point, but it's definitely not predictable like Owens and Reigns was.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know there's people who just assume Cody's winning, and I know there's people who think Cody shouldn't win and Reigns should keep the title. And I'm still, on a personal level, like in terms of if they asked me to make the call, I mean, I guess I'd have more questions. You know, what's Reigns' schedule? What are your thoughts on Cody? I think if you want to get something out of Cody, having him come up short could undercut his potential to be a full-time centerpiece babyface draw, eventually a heel, for the company. And so there's a lot at stake there. And, you know, if they really think they want Cody to be that person, and they have a great storyline in mind for, you know, what happens to the bloodline when Reigns loses the title, I'm open to that. But there is part of me that just thinks this reign is so special. I mean what I say. I'd be fine if Reigns is champion until he turns babyface in 1, 2, 3 years. Like, I am nostalgic for the title reigns that last years and years and years. And I was advocating for it when we had these rapid fire title changes, you know, over the past couple of decades. It was just way too much. And, you know, where people were stacking up, I'm an 8-time world champion. Yeah, you've been in the business for 18 months. Shut up. Or, you know, 4 years even, and you're a 12-time champion, whatever. I'm exaggerating. But it got to be kind of ridiculous. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I think they might know what they're going to do, and then they also, in the back of their mind, might think we have a backup plan in case we decide to go a different direction. What do you think, Alex?
Oh, okay. We avoided it as long as we could, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I know what's coming. Go ahead.
I want Reigns to win definitively. I want no part of a Cody Reign at this point. I'm not interested. And
wow.
There's a few reasons for that. The major one being, I am very over the sentiment right now that Reigns' run is boring, I want something new, blah, 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 blah. Because, quite frankly, most of the people that are saying that are going to be complaining 6 weeks after Cody wins the title and are going to turn on him and want something new, too. And it's just, it's to the point now where it's like, can we just let everything play out and stop wishing for things to end prematurely, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway,
yeah.
Besides that, I look at it from this standpoint. If you're going to do a title change, you need a good answer to the question, then what? And I feel like when you look at the future and you say Reigns wins, then what? I feel like the list of possibilities is significantly greater than it is for Cody when you say, then what? Because I look at the list of challengers for Cody after the fact, and I look at what Reigns would be doing without the title, and I think if you put them on a pay-per-view, the same show, Reigns' match is more important, even without the title. And I think that that damages all of the goodwill that has been done to the title over the last 2 years, and that's why I wouldn't do it. Until you get to the point where that's not the case, I don't think you take the belt off the guy. And the other big, big thing, I like Cody. I don't have a dislike for him. If it comes off that way, that's not what I'm getting at here. I'm just very partial to the Roman Reigns side of things.
Didn't you call him a narcissist?
His character is a narcissist.
But he's a babyface. How can a babyface be a narcissist?
Do you watch him on television?
Yes, I might be prodding a little bit here.
So, anyway, yeah. Besides the then what and everything like that, I think the guy that beats Reigns should be somebody that you look at as main eventing 3 to 5 WrestleManias. And the thing is, Cody's coming up on 38. He's got some wear on the tires. You know, he just had the big injury. I think it's a huge risk. And I just don't personally believe that the guy is going to carry the company into the future. And I just don't necessarily know if it's worth the risk. And on top of that, all of this talk of if he doesn't beat Reigns, he's ruined. I think if you even have to have that conversation about the person, they're not worth giving it to. Because if he's that over and people care that much, he'll be fine if he loses.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's just kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. I think it's a very, very reasonable point of view on this. I think the thought that I've had is, you know, and it was, you know, the argument, it was part of the argument about, you know, Drew winning at Clash at the Castle. And it's like, are you really going to put Drew ahead of whatever Roman's doing on any show? Is that going to work? And sometimes somebody is just so defining of the era, as Reigns has become of the past couple of years for WWE, that you can't introduce a new lead in this story, in the WWE broader, you know, the world title story. And you don't want a champion like Punk, who the only time he headlined, you know, went on last on a pay-per-view was when he was against Rock and Cena. Otherwise, he was underneath other matches. So, you know, that's a problem. So anyway, it's interesting. I'm enjoying it. And yeah. So, all right. Well, anyway, let's keep rolling here. It's a fascinating topic. I'm so excited to see what they do at WrestleMania. I'm excited to see what they do the next 2 weeks, and then at Mania, and then what the follow up is. Mike, back to you.
Yeah, I'm with you, Wade, on that. I like what Zach brought up. If Cody was to win, maybe down the road you could have Cody versus Brock for the title. I think that would be a really good fresh matchup. I think he brought up Gunther, Theory. They're all guys that could face Cody down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess there's good matches for both. I mean, I'm a big fan of Reigns. Like, if Cody beats Reigns, I'm going to miss the whole thing, because, like, these Reigns matches with him the champion, and can the guy going up against him, can he beat him? You know, I'll miss all that if Cody beats him. But at the same time, I'm a big Cody fan, so it's hard, like, who I'm going to root for. But I think I'm rooting for Cody, and I hope he gets the title. But it'll definitely be a lot of fun.
Yeah, yep. All right, cool. Anything else, Mike?
Yeah, if I could touch on the Cena theory topic from earlier.
Sure, yeah, yeah, jump on in. Yeah, we brought it up.
Yeah, and I think I know, Wade, you were saying about, like, it doesn't make sense because, like, Cena was saying, like, if Theory wins, then he's still a failure. How's he going to face that post-Mania crowd and all that? And I guess he means, like, the character Cena, like, he doesn't see Theory as that guy. He thinks that he doesn't have it. And even if he does beat Cena, I guess Cena feels like that would just be some kind of miracle, some kind of fluke, and Theory still wouldn't be a future Randy Orton or future John Cena. I guess he just doesn't feel that Theory is that guy and doesn't have it. But I think it's going to be where during the match, Theory will get the victory, and Theory will prove to Cena that he does have it, and then Cena will happily, you know, put him over. Maybe they'll wait till SummerSlam, like you brought up on the flagship, Wade, but I think that's what it is. It's like Theory's just going to prove to Cena that he does have it.
Yeah, and part of coming down too hard, even though I will stand by some of my criticism of that segment, is I am kind of curious, what is the end of this? You know, what do they do at Mania, and what is the follow-up? What pin are they setting up? I don't know if that's a right metaphor, but, you know, what pin are they setting up to knock down? What are they preparing us for in that promo that might make more sense and seem less, you know, because I know all the headlines are Cena buries Theory, and, you know, and it could turn out that's what it was, that Cena just came out and just went through his normal motions. He was in his comfort zone, you know, being John Cena. And like I said, it came across as him just putting on television a pep talk Vince McMahon might have given him someday. I don't think that's a good reason to do the promo. And I don't think we should talk on TV about whether someone's ready to carry the company. I think the storyline should be based around – I mean, I will – a lot of room for rare exception, but it should always be in the context of, you know, what matters most is, are you winning? And, you know, and how are you winning? And, you know, Cena had a lot to work with there that they didn't go into, because I just don't know if he had familiarity with Theory's U.S. title reign. That seemed like a pretty generic promo Cena could have given to anybody who was young, and he sort of wants to put through the initiation that he went through. But anyway, yeah. Alex, anything you want to add?
No. Theory needs to win definitively, and then we'll go from there.
Yep. Yep. Fair enough. All right. Cool. Mike, any closing words?
I guess that's about it, but real quick, I want your opinion, Alex, on what they were talking about on the flagship with, like, Bel Air, when she comes out with the hair twirling, and because who was it? Zach, I think? He disagreed with you, Wade?
No, Travis Bryant pushed back on Monday
Travis.
Night.
It was
he
Travis.
Thought.
Yep. Yeah, yep. I like that debate. I like that whole debate. So I wanted Alex's opinion on how he feels about Bel Air when she comes out like that with the hair twirling and all that.
Wade,
is it a big deal or no?
Wade is right 1,000%. And I'm not saying that because he's sitting here. I got extremely frustrated with the segment you're talking about. I fast forwarded through it after a little bit. So Wade is right.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Mike, what's your take? Do you think that's, well, Mike, I'm just curious, Mike, where do you stand on the disagreement I had?
I was, like, in the middle, you know, like you guys. Like,
okay.
I agree with Travis in a way, you know, like, I think she can just go out there and, like, have fun. Like, that's her just having fun out there and all that. But I see way where you're coming from where, you know, sometimes I would rather her just come down, like, all serious, like she did a couple weeks ago. Actually, she didn't do all that. She came down into the ring all
serious.
Yeah,
I know.
And everything.
I like
that.
Like,
she wanted, like, she wanted to kick butt. So, like, I don't have a problem with that either. So, like, yeah, like, I'm in the middle. I see both of your points, though.
Sure. Yeah. Alex, explain yourself in just a few seconds. Like, you're when you say you agree with me 1,000%. In your words, what would you advise she do differently, and why?
Wrestling is not time to have fun with your friends. It's an athletic competition, and she's an adult who's the champion of said athletic competition, and she should conduct herself that way.
Yeah, that is concise, and I agree. And you know what? I would make an exception if it seemed like it fit her personality to be like this kind of, you know, juvenile, youthful, exuberant, smiley, skipping to the ring person. She comes across as a more serious grown woman in her 30s. And so in that respect, like, I'm not going to rule out someone acting that way. I just don't think it fits her. I think it comes across as somebody deciding that would be a good gimmick for you to portray. And she just keeps doing it because they want to get across those rote entrances with signature things that people do. And personality, how he comes to the ring. I think it feels incongruent with who Belair comes across outside of the ring and how I think she would come across. I think she'd come across as a much bigger star if there was more congruency with how she came to the ring to who I think everybody recognizes as a woman in her 30s she probably really is like.
Yeah, if she was portrayed like Carmella, it would be totally fine, but she's not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, cool. Let's go to Colin Baltimore. Colin, well, since we brought you on the show, what are your thoughts on SmackDown tonight?
So I guess you brought up Bianca, and I kind of agree. I've been down on Bianca for a long time now in terms of her character. It's been, that been good. So I kind of agree with Bianca. So Bianca's been so, I view Bianca and Cody Rhodes very similar, where people were super hyped for Bianca to be the champion at WrestleMania, and now we see how her title run has been. She's secondary to Becky Lynch. So, and I have a feeling I'd be kind of similar to Cody Rhodes, because I feel Cody Rhodes is just an entrance. People love seeing whoa, just like how people like seeing Seth Rollins theme music all the time, even when he's in the rain, like what happened on Monday. I feel like that Cody Rhodes is just an entrance. And it's just, there's no, and again, like I said before, there's no story between Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns beyond the fact that he wants to be champion for his father. And that's all pretty much what they're telling me every single week he's out there. He's not really doing it. And he's trying to defend Sami Zayn because he's out there and not Kevin Owens, and they only have that. So I just think this whole Cody Rhodes thing isn't working for me personally. I don't really feel like, I feel like when he goes into WrestleMania, I expect him to lose, because why should I care about him winning the championship if he's not doing anything with Roman Reigns in particular, for supposed to be Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, not Cody Rhodes and Sami Zayn and the Usos and all this stuff. I just think at this point, there's only a few weeks for WrestleMania, to focus on that, just like what they did with Rhea and Charlotte tonight. More of that, less than him coming out there to get behind the back of Sami Zayn. So what do you think about that and Kitty Wet and this entire dynamic between, they're trying to tell me that Cody Rhodes is important to win a championship. Okay, fine, but he's out there with Sami Zayn and not fully behind, not really cared too much heavily on Roman Reigns, where what he should be focusing on at this point with a few weeks for WrestleMania to go. So what do you think about that dynamic?
Alex, what do you think?
Well, Roman's not there. So the thought process is, if you're Cody, you're going to mess with the bloodline to get in Roman's head. I think that's what they're going for.
Mm-hmm.
The part of that I had an issue with was the Cody raising Sammy's hand and pointing to him. Like, we're supposed to care that Cody approves of Sami Zayn, when at mm-hmm. this point with the way the storyline has gone, it probably should have been Sammy that raised Cody's hand and told everybody he approved of Cody.
It almost, sorry for sneaking in this comment, but did it almost come across like Sammy was like, what are you doing to Cody?
Yes.
Like, almost like a shoot?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because I like Zayn a lot, and I remember the first time I heard about him when he was El Generico working in Chikara or something, you know, years and years and years ago. But it's funny because you see him on, like, the Steve Austin show, and you just sit there and you're like, this guy gets it. And if you're a longtime fan, you can relate to that guy because you're just like, wow, like he knows his stuff. He knows what he's talking about. And he's like genuinely excited to be here with somebody like Austin and like understands what this moment is. And because of all of that like experience I have with him, I can picture him in that moment thinking exactly what we're saying right now. Like, you idiot, this is not the way this should go. Like, you telling the fans that you're raising my hand, it looks like I'm the one wrestling Roman. Like, you can just see all of that going through his head. And the reaction to Cody was just like, what are you doing?
Yes. Yep, yep. Anyway, I interrupted. Alex, did you have anything more you wanted to add to that point? I don't want to derail other talking points you had as far as that goes. And what comes?
No, just that was the only part of that really bothered me. The yeah. rest of it, I get where you're coming from, Kyle, but the problem is with Cody right now is that you can't just have him sit on his hands in situations like that. Like, he has to get involved with the Bloodline because the Bloodline are the extension of Roman that has been on TV. You know, just like he's had the altercations or back and forth with Paul Heyman. Like, that's the best we're going to get. So he has to be involved in that. Otherwise, you're going to totally forget that he's in the main event at all.
Yeah, yeah. You put good words to some thoughts I was having as far as that goes. Yeah, go ahead, Cal. What's your thought?
I just feel like that I'm just thinking this after WrestleMania, I'm just going to be intrigued what they're going to do with Cody Rhodes, whether he wins or loses in terms of people who are super high. I'm just going to be intrigued what they do after WrestleMania with him because it's like, it'll be interesting what happens when he loses. It'll be interesting how they're going to book him after that. That's just because so people are so hyped with him now. I'll be intrigued what they're going to do that Monday after WrestleMania, but I guess we'll wait and see for that. I guess I'll get to Rhea and Charlotte, that whole promo back and forth somewhat. Anyway, WrestleMania just in general. They're not giving me really all that excited for WrestleMania fully with the build to these matches for the most part. They're just kind of thrown together in some respects because I'm just watching Charlotte and Rhea. I'm like, okay, I know how good these two are, but it turns and I am expecting hopefully for Rhea to win, but the build to these to some of these matches, I'm not all that really hyped over really for. So what do you think, just in terms of the build in general for WrestleMania, how they did a good job to build WrestleMania up to this point to get really excited for, or is it just feels like everything's like thrown together? What do you think about the build to WrestleMania and as a whole?
Alex, where are you on the? I guess I want to take into consideration what they did on SmackDown tonight, you know, with Charlotte and Ripley, you know, what they're yeah. hinting at with Rey and Dominic. I don't want to hold against them the fact that it's not all just set up and played out and we're in reruns where we're sort of like so many WrestleMania seasons, like, oh, let's get to the show already. It actually feels like things are coming together almost at the last second, even with Gunther in the storyline there. But my overall feeling right now, and I honestly haven't put a ton of thought into it because it just feels so in progress. But my feeling is they're doing a pretty good job building up a WrestleMania caliber show with the talent that they have to work with. I know there's people who are not going to get over Omos and Lesnar, but I've, you know, made my case on that you're not going to get a great match on Lesnar anyway. So let's just get in and out. But yeah, where are you in terms of what Kyle's asking, the build to Mania at this point?
I'm fine with it for the most part. I think this is one of those years where, unfortunately, it's not going to be one of those cards where there's 20 really important things that we're packing onto the show. It's very clearly, you know, Ripley and Charlotte, Cody and Roman, and then the Usos against Sammy and KO, I guess. And obviously, they're still building with Dominic and Rey, but I think that's kind of your big four. And then everything else is just kind of filling in around it. Like Gunther is what he is. And he really hasn't been involved in like a big time storyline, you just know that you're going to get a great match out of him, and that's what they're going to give you on the card. So that's fine for what it is. Asuka and Belair is, they got to have two women's title matches on the show, and they decided they wanted to do something different with Bayley and Becky. So that's kind of what it is. You know, the Bayley-Becky thing is something to get legacy people involved, and it's kind of a special attraction. Again, kind of is what it is. And then the same could be said for Lashley and Wyatt and Omos and Brock, right? So it's really kind of built around the four matches I mentioned at the top, and everything else is going to kind of fill in around it. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You're going to have a Mania like that every now and again. And I get where you're coming from as far as some of the build goes, but at the same time, to Wade's point, I really prefer this to some of those years where we knew the whole card like 3 weeks ago and we're just sitting here and watching Elimination Chamber. Like, this show is a waste of my time because we already know the full Mania card. Like, I'm really glad that's not the case. And things are coming together. It's a little contrived, but most of it's pretty organic, and we seem to be getting there at a decent pace. And there are still, what do we have? Three episodes of Raw and two episodes of SmackDown or something like that before the show. So there's a little bit of time to add some juice to some of this stuff. But again, I stand by what I said, where we're probably just going to have those four big matches and everything else is going to kind of fill it out. But I do think that the shows will overall be pretty good based on what's on paper.
And yeah, so WrestleMania is April 1st. Today's March 10th. So we've got the SmackDowns on the 17th, 24th, and 31st.
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah. So three of you.
Okay. I guess that's fair. I am looking forward to WrestleMania in general. It's just, I guess I'm used to the previous builds over recent years of me getting excited over that because somebody did the last few years. So maybe this is she just decided to do it this way. Maybe that's why. The last point I was going to bring up was I forgot. It was about Ray and Dominic and this whole entire thing with that. I am, you know, just Ray in general being inducted to the Hall of Fame. That's like pretty cool to see because I've watched Ray since I started watching wrestling in 2009. At least when I started watching wrestling, so that's why I started watching him. And it's like that was the first wrestler I was into was Ray Mysterio. So to see him be in the Hall of Fame is still actually active, still wrestling. That's a first because we have Edge now with Steve currently as well, but he retired and then came back. We have Ray who's still there competing. So I think that's pretty cool and the dynamic with him and Dominic is really cool. I am ready for them to actually implode and them to brawl at some point. But what do you think about the whole dynamic with Rey Mysterio, him being Hall of Fame and then currently active still? What do you think about that dynamic? How do you feel about that?
I think we largely covered that, right, Alex? I don't know if there's anything more we want.
Yeah.
I don't need to add to that. Yeah.
No,
but I guess.
Yeah.
So I guess it's it for me then. That's a different topic.
Okay. Cool. Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to Ryan and Cumberland, and then it'll be time for a roundtable with Javier. Ryan, thanks for calling. Been a while since we talked to you. What's on your mind tonight about SmackDown?
I have a question on the Fatal 5-Way match. Notice that Jessica Cora was in the ring, and the referee ran into the ring to make the count, even though she was right there. Was she, like, distracted? Because it seemed like maybe she was, like, listening to something, like an earpiece or something. Maybe just didn't see the count, and the referee stepped in and decided to make the count, or did something else happen?
It was funny. I was going to rewind to kind of rewatch that, and I didn't, so I don't know. Alex, did you pick up on anything like that Ryan's bringing up?
Which match was it? I'm
just the Fatal 5-Way and how the two referees matches were handled in terms of both making the count. I kind of wanted to rewind and just look at how that played out and if they – if it, because it's just not often – you know, sometimes we see a referee count – one referee count two shoulders down, but to have two referees coming in, how do you think they handled that?
Oh, I think there – I think the way they covered it is there was one on the outside because there was five of them.
Yeah.
So there was one policing the outside, and then they broke into the ring to make the count when both pinfalls occurred. I could be wrong, but that was how I took it.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, Ryan, you can follow up on that or bring up your next topic.
Well, that was there was only one pinfall going on, so it didn't make a whole lot of sense. I thought she was maybe – it sounded like she was listening to something in the back, by the way. Her facial expressions were geared. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, I'd have to rewatch it. I mean, I assume she knew it was gonna what was happening and what was she was supposed to do. So, yeah. Yeah, but it is weird having an outside referee and then suddenly become an inside referee making the count. But like I said, I actually intended to kind of rewind and see how that played out in terms of her body language and entering the ring, and I didn't. So I can't speak on it in detail.
Okay. My second question is about Rey Mysterio and Dominic. Do you catch up on what Michael Cole said about Dominic Imus got kicked out of the house when he was younger? Like, he actually...
Yeah.
Is that like a shoot? Like, did that actually happen? Have you heard that story before?
I hadn't. And that was different. It was a different tone, Alex, than usual when they talk about Dominic. And they were certainly portraying him as this, like, you know, this kid who had been a punk kid who, you know, was into trouble, and Rey wanted to kick him out of the house to teach him a lesson when he was in his, you know, when he was 14, 15 years old. They were going pretty hard on trying to sell, you know, sell the idea, real or not, that the Dominic you see now is who Rey honestly feared he was going to become, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. What'd you think?
Based on the situation, it actually wouldn't surprise me, especially since, like, not the first time we saw Dominic because he was, you know, eight or something.
Right.
But,
right.
But when we saw him as an adult, like, he was, like, 20 and already had all those tattoos. So I guess it's mm-hmm. possible that he was, like, going out and getting tattoos or something like that when he was, like, 15, 16. And, you know, not to bring it up because it is a storyline thing, but it is partially true. Like, Rey was on the road, so he didn't really have his dad at home as much. So I guess it's entirely possible. I don't know one way or the other, but connecting some dots, it stands to reason that it could be true, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Ryan, what else?
I have a question on that Kane commercial. They showed him as the fake Diesel. Is this the first time they've actually admitted to that? Because, like, usually you have to read, like, you know, these newsletters or wrestling websites to find information. Mm-hmm. It's not WWE, like, telling you that type of stuff.
Boy, that's not something that WWE likes to relive. That was such a, and for so many reasons, of, you know, kind of an embarrassing little mini chapter in their war with WCW. I don't know that they've ever, like, in the narrative structure of the TV show, talked about him in that role. They've shied away from it. Certainly they ought to in a documentary-style show. So that doesn't surprise me. And since he's largely retired, it kind of fits my preferred structure, which is don't bring that stuff up until they're done, as someone you're supposed to immerse yourself into believing they're in their current, you know, fictional role. Alex, do you remember any references to Glenn Jacobs being fake Diesel before in the narrative of WWE?
On the television, no, but they have a show on the network that's called Photo Shoot, and it's very silly, but it's kind of funny. And they sit down a wrestler in front of, like, a big projector movie screen looking deal, and they show them pictures of themselves throughout their career, and they talk about it. And in that show, Kane was a participant, and they showed him pictures of Isaac Yankum, and he had to talk about that. And they did fake Diesel, and he had to talk about that. And then they showed him, you know, debuting as Kane. So if that counts, then yes, because I've seen that, but that wasn't on regular TV. And I don't know if we're supposed to believe this is either, because it's like a commercial inside the show for another show that's a meta show. So I don't know how to take that.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Anything else for us, Ryan?
final question, I guess, for you is on Sarah Logan. I don't know if you caught this, but Michael Cole claimed that she put a spell on Ricochet and thought she was supposed to be a Viking and not a witch. So this seems something more out of like these Impact ladies that are all witches, not an actual Viking. So I don't know if you know anything about
this is a weird.
Put spells on people.
Yeah, I don't know everything about Viking history, even though I'm a Minnesota Viking fan, other than I'm told Vikings didn't wear horns, which ruins everything. But the Danhausen addition to Valhalla's character was a little weird, Alex. What was your take?
What's a Danhausen?
We'll explain off air. I love it.
I don't get it. I think they should ask Edge, because didn't he do some cameos on that Viking show? So he would know.
Yeah, the idea that she has, like, in a creepy look that can pierce, you know, this piercing stare that's kind of crazy and off-putting, that's one thing. You know, if there's sort of a kind of a craziness to her that is intimidating, I mean, maybe you can sell that, but the idea that, like, it's like she cast a spell, I just think you should stay away from that. Now we're getting into Papa Shango, you know, territory, or at least you're suggesting the possibility of that, and that is not good. All right, cool. Brian, thanks.
Thanks for taking the call.
All right. It is time for Javier and where is it? Oh, there it is. I haven't played a jingle in a while. Didn't know where it was. PW Torch contributor Javier Machado back for a roundtable with Alex and me. Javier, how's it going?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Alex. How's it going?
Good, good. Good to talk to you. Glad to hear from you. So what are your thoughts on
the
show?
Sean's question. Just to answer Sean's question, yeah, it's been it's not necessarily work, but like the snowball effects of, you know, extra work.
sure, makes sense. Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was a good show. I do want to, like, talk more about that Rey Mysterio thing, because whoever had the idea of working the whole inducting him into the Hall of Fame with the whole Dominic ruining his moment, I thought that was great. I loathe Dominic at this point. So the entire build is working for me. I can't wait to see Dominic take on Michael Cole at WrestleMania, since I think that's what's where they're heading, considering Michael Cole's reactions to the stuff that's going on. The one thing I don't want to see, I don't want to see Rey Mysterio just, you know, go after Dominic, you know, and like snap and go after Dominic. What I want him to say, is basically say, look, I'm not gonna, you know, attack you, but it doesn't mean that we can't have a wrestling match, and then, like, you know, work it into that way, because I don't want to see him, like, just, you know, up and, you know, hit his son, because it's his son, and I prefer he's like, you know, like say, hey, look, I'm not gonna fight you, and then, you know, Dominic's like, yeah, you're a coward. He goes, but we could have a wrestling match and doing this in a sporting competition, you know, and then that's what, you know, and then Dominic is, you know, freaks out about it, because then it's an actual match.
Alex, what do you think? What do you think about Javier saying, and where do you think, in your opinion, this should go in terms of the escalation to a match?
I'm fine with that. I think you lose some of the heat for it, though. I think if Dominic can continue to push the buttons and Rey finally does snap, you have a little bit more heat. Because the problem with – I don't hate what you're saying, Javier, but the problem with it from my standpoint is in your situation, I feel like Rey has to win, and I just feel like that's the wrong way to go. I think if Rey snaps and is off his game a little bit and is – what's the word I'm looking for? Like, so in the moment and enraged at his son and wants to get – you know, teach him a lesson – that's where Dominic could win with some underhanded tactics, and they could throw in a must-retire stipulation or something like that. Because the other problem, too, is that if Dominic beats him clean, like, that ruins the whole Dominic character.
Yeah. Javier?
Yeah, because I see it like basically, you know, Dominic in the Vader role trying to turn his, you know, obviously, you know, father-son dynamic reverse, but, you know, Dominic trying to turn Rey into the dark side. So if Rey does, you know, attack him in anger outside of a wrestling match, it's like Dominic already won. So, you know, so that, you know, and like, a, you know, that kind. Yeah. So, and not like a one in terms of like, you know, like it you know, it, yeah, I don't like that idea.
Yeah. Cool. What else?
The other thing I want to talk about that yeah, wasn't mentioned is, that, Heyman, promo. I thought I thoroughly enjoyed that because essentially this is like when we talk about AEW not following up on stuff with, you know, you don't need to basically run, you know, a clip show of like, you know, what happened before, because during that promo, Heyman basically reframed what was going on between Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes and basically, you know, while, you know, promoting what was going on, he basically reframes it. You know, and I thought that was a very useful thing to do.
Tell me what you took from what Heyman said to reframe it.
Well, basically he said that the idea is that every single conflict that they've had, they basically decide whether either to get into the head of the wrestler by, you know, manipulation and lying or whatever, or if you basically, or they say the truth that we're the best and you just can't deal with us. But with Cody's case, the getting into your head to weaken him is by telling him the truth, you know, so which is what, you know, why Cody Rhodes is going to be like in a more weakened position than anybody else, because they're both in his head and they're telling him the truth.
Yeah. Did you like that aspect of it, Alex? We haven't talked about that Heyman promo in that kind of detail.
I liked it a lot. I kind of took something different from it as far as what I thought was important. And that was the fact that Heyman really, really pumped up Cody with the mention of, you know, Cody being like the one guy he didn't want to see opposite Reigns.
Yes.
It you know, it's funny because other than Brock Lesnar, I don't think Heyman has sold for anybody against Reigns at this point as being like legitimately afraid that Reigns could lose the title. He didn't outwardly say that, but he certainly conveyed it. And that was, to me, that was the talking point of the promo. The rest of it was great with, you know, their strategies and all that kind of stuff. And the other part of it too is that, you know, Cody can explain that away by saying, well, they just explained the two things that they do. Clearly, you know, this is actually the gangster way, but they're telling me it's the truth because they think that's the way they're going to get in my head. So you can look at it that way too.
Yeah. Yeah. I wrote in my report at pwtorch.com on SmackDown tonight that Heyman is just like that promo is what he's delivered some great promos in recent years, but like just the backstage with Kayla or whomever and just cutting a more kind of traditional in front of a backdrop promo as opposed to the middle of the ring, the grandiose promos, or introducing and speaking on behalf of someone else and not doing a lot of talking. Like, I like Heyman in that setting as part of the variety and the spectrum of what he does so well. And he's portrayed so many different characters and so many, and it's been age appropriate. You know, he went from the brash guy butting heads with authority figures, including Bill Watts. And then he rebelled and became the entrepreneurial counterculture, let's shake up this industry and break all the rules, but I'm in charge. And then he went to being part of the establishment, writing for SmackDown. But then 30 years ago, last month, he got booted from SmackDown because reportedly he wasn't returning people's calls and playing the part the right corporate way, kind of going back to his old stuff. It's like there's all these stages for him, and he's everything that he's done, good and bad in his career, has led to this character. And part of what I saw him do and what I'm seeing him do is take, I think, responsibility for getting Cody Rhodes over, a worthy challenger and perhaps a worthy successor to Roman Reigns. And he can't show that hand in a way where it's transparent that I'm having to help Cody get over. But I think he's doing it, and I think it's intentional. I think everything that they're booking is they want the Cody Roman match to be successful, and part of that is protecting Cody from himself, accentuating what Cody's great at, looking at how the crowd is reacting and leaning into things that are working and steering away from things that aren't. And then when he's not around, saying things like, Alex, you're bringing up about him that plant some seeds about in fans' minds that somebody like Heyman, who doesn't say this kind of thing a lot, is saying this about him. Heyman has equity built up, and he does so convincingly. He's still a sleazebag. You know, he's still Paul Heyman, the heel manager character that you want to see get showing up, but there's a credibility to his character, too, that's undeniable. And so it's and that's why I said, you know, when people are rooting for Reigns against Sammy for WrestleMania, I'm like, I don't blame you, but you're about to witness something really fascinating, which is Cody being dropped into a storyline with Roman. And I continue to be fascinated with the way that they're telling the Cody story and how much they have his back in terms of not undercutting him, but trying to cleverly build him up. Javier, your thoughts?
Well, and also how deftly they're handling things on the other side, which is his biggest threat being Sami Zayn, by making the Sami Zayn, Jay, KO, and Jimmy, you know, story compelling as well. So you're less mm-hmm. interested in seeing Sami Zayn go after Roman Reigns than you are to see the dynamic between, you know, this broken friendship and trying to repair the other fractured friendship on the other side or what's going to go on there. So you have the drama of that that's also, like, insulating Cody to a certain degree from, you know, having to compete with Sami Zayn because they're both – while they're both involved essentially with the same storyline, there's, like, enough of a line in the sand where Cody's on this side going after Roman, and I think the fans so far have, for the most part, gone with it. You know, and so I thought that's also something that they've definitely handled that because that was the biggest worry, you know, coming out of the Royal Rumble and Sami Zayn, you know, breaking up.
What do you think about Sammy or Cody raising Sammy's hand at the end and so Sammy's reaction to it? Did you think something might be going on there? Did it feel scripted and natural and good? What was your take?
Okay. If you're watching it from the point of view of, like, analyzing things, yeah, it doesn't seem natural because it really should be the other way around, like you guys mentioned. But I think the idea of doing that is to signpost to the audience that are less likely to, who are a little bit more, you know, along for the ride, that Cody Rhodes is mm-hmm. the guy because he's the one who's going after Roman Reigns, while Sami Zayn is like the everyman who's like, you know, he's like the Hacksaw Jim Duggan that's climbing through the ranks and coming out of nowhere. Although if you, you know, from reality point, like, you know, Sami Zayn was at points, you know, and pretty much probably is still more over than Cody. But I think the idea is to serve as a camouflage. So if you're not like, in, you know, if you haven't seen the con for what it is, I think you're, you know, that, yeah. that helps, you know, that basically reinforces the idea that, you know, Cody's the one who's destined for Roman Reigns while Sami Zayn's dealing with this other stuff. Now, granted, if you're more like, you know, now an analytical mindset, then you would, you know, at that point you're like, okay, well, here's the con and why they're doing it. And then that starts to get you a little bit further out of that.
Sure. Yeah. Yep, I like that. What else, Javier?
I co-signed the fact that we're not going to get a finish between Drew and Sheamus. I think the idea is I think they're probably going to be interference in the match by the. By Gunther's group, you know, likely they'll be at ringside and then, you know, there'll be a bump and then they'll get into a fight and then ending the match getting kicked out. And then, like, as punishment for them and getting interfered in the match, then he's going to be forced to do a triple threat is probably my guess how they're going to run that next week.
Yeah, I could see that.
And then
are you okay with triple threat in this case, Javier?
Well, I mean, it sounds like the crowd is. I am for the reason Alex said. Yeah. I kind of am for a lot of the reasons that Alex said that I I am hoping that this is a way to get, and this would be the third time, you know, that happened with one of the lower titles, you know, in order for him to lose, you know, to lose the title. So then he either faces Cody if Cody wins, but I also think there's a possibility that they face, you know, if Cody doesn't win, to set up a Bloodline versus Gunther and Imperium by, you know, slightly turning Imperium babyface. I think that's the other possibility. You know, they could also have those two groups wrestle because, you know, Imperium would be a good good next opponents for the Usos, while Gunther going after Roman Reigns would be, you know, probably my next favorite match to watch.
Yeah, I'd sign up for that. Cool. What else, Javier?
Well, I have a question for Alex, because with the conversation about the whole Moxley getting a Wrestler of the Year over Roman, some people have defended that by saying that Roman is, you know, well, it's not that, you know, that reason Moxley gets, because you remove Roman from the Bloodline storyline and plug somebody else in, and, you know, it's the storyline that gets him over. What do you think about that asinine theory?
I don't want to have a Todd Martin level rant on this whole situation, but I lost all respect for anything that those awards used to represent with what I read this year. That's an absolute joke. Every single part of it is an absolute joke.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Javier, it was that argument.
Okay. Yeah.
It was that argument.
It was brought up in an email in the mailbag. Yeah.
It's like that argument specifically.
For people who haven't heard, for people who haven't heard the fixed mailbag, because I think that's where it came up. Somebody emailed and just said, you know, one of the reasons that maybe Roman is being overrated by Todd in the way that he framed aspects of his thrashing of the results of the Observer Awards and Dave Meltzer's justification or rationalization backing up Moxley getting the nod over Roman by a wide margin is that Roman is successful because of who he's surrounded with, and that you could put someone else in that spot and they would, you know, perhaps be nearly equally successful or equal or more successful than Roman because everybody is so good around him. And that was, you know, trying to build up the idea that, you know, it's not as – that Roman is almost overrated in the sense that he's not doing this alone. He just happens to be dropped into the middle of a very successful storyline. So that's a little more background. I don't know. Javier, you're looking for Alex to address that specifically.
But the other the problem with that is that AEW is an ensemble-based company. And
yes.
when you're an ensemble-based company, the whole logic behind that is that you don't have an MVP. What my point is if you're a college football team with two quarterbacks, one of your two quarterbacks can't win MVP if they both play half the time because it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
If they were so good that they won MVP, they would be playing all the time. It's the same concept.
And I'll add to it. You know, you cannot drop someone else into that spot. Like Roman, like, let's not underrate how freaking good Roman Reigns has been for a very long time and how much in like how his matches and like I talk about it all the time. It's not just the moves you do, it's what you do in between the moves. It's wrestling in a way that's true to your character. It's owning the ring. It's exuding a confidence, an arrogance, a star power. Conan told me once, like, it's, you know, we call it having the angel, you know, another word for Christmas, having the angel. Like, Roman has that. He's fit. He's in the right slot now for who he's always been. And he's got the writing and the support and a great storyline and the Sami Zayn unexpected surprise. All that's working for him, but no, Vince McMahon tried to do the Lex Express thinking I can create a new Hulk Hogan. You can't. You know, I mean, you just, like, some people just are right for the moment as the centerpiece top star act, and it is crazy to say that you could drop anybody else in that spot and that they would benefit so much that you'd be making a case for them the way that you do for Roman. I mean, not that there's nobody else in the world who could play that role, but the role would be different if it was somebody else. This is just perfect for Roman, and Roman is – yeah.
It'd be completely different. They're called the Bloodline because Roman's a legacy wrestler, so are the Usos, and the Usos are at the top of the game, and they're cousins. And then you still have the Rock out there, which hasn't, you know, which hopefully at some point gets involved in this, you know. So I mean the only way you can plug and play is by replacing Roman Reigns with another wrestler that's almost exactly like Roman Reigns.
The other part of it that plays into all this that makes it the Bloodline and makes us all so invested on top of all of it is that all three of us have watched this product long enough to the point where we've seen the rest of their family. We know it's a Bloodline because we've watched the whole family for years. You can't put Logan Paul in Roman Reigns' spot and everything is the same. And that's the problem with this argument. Because if it was that easy, and I'm not dogging AEW when I say that, but if it was that easy, then there would be 2.5 million people watching AEW with a great storyline right now, and that's not the case. You can't just plug people in. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. Go ahead, Javier.
So I want to get that rant out of everybody because that had been bugging me. I think that's pretty much it for the show. I mean, I guess the other thing, slightly tangential to the show, I've really not been really digging the build they've been doing with the women towards WrestleMania. Because, right now, I think that the matchup I'm most intrigued by is a possible matchup between Beth Phoenix and Rhea Ripley at some point. Because I'm not really too much into I'm not saying that they're bad necessarily, but they don't feel have the WrestleMania momentum for me.
Yeah, this isn't a year where it came together. I agree. I mean, I am a fan of Rhea Ripley. I'm a fan of Charlotte. I think she's in improved state now versus her previous heel face tweener whatever queen robotic stuff. I'm fine with it. I think it's WrestleMania worthy, but it's not jump off the page, man. You could headline night one with this and no one's going to question it. And then Asuka Belair, it'd be fine. But no one had that on their bingo card of that's the WrestleMania match that's going to really, help move WrestleMania up a notch. So yeah, I mean, and then obviously, unfortunately, Becky and the Legends against Bayley. It's less intriguing because Bayley just feels, has felt flat, unfortunately. And that group just hasn't really developed particularly well. I mean, I've had my ideas for how to do a better job with them, but I don't even know if that would bring them up. The performances would still have to be better. So yeah, I mean, it's not a stellar year for women at WrestleMania. Alex, what do you think?
I totally agree. I on the Raw side, I think the big problem is when Becky got hurt, they kind of rushed some things and ended up with Bianca and Bayley. And then what you just talked about with Bayley just not being what she was, because if you ask me, if you go back to the return at SummerSlam, I made the assumption that we were building to an eventual Bianca Bayley WrestleMania match with Bianca beating Bayley. And then that would be her third of four horsewomen, and then you build to her and Charlotte next year. And clearly, with the injury to Becky, they ended up doing that a little bit sooner than they anticipated, and we ended up where we are now. I truly think that's what ended up happening.
Yeah. Javier, anything else?
No, I just want to touch on the theory thing. My thoughts for him, I don't know if he'll be able to get to, because to break it down to tiers, there's the Roman Reigns tier where, do I see him as someone who could hold the belt for, 2 or 5 years? I think the possibility's there, where I think he's for sure a shoe-in would be, when the title belt has been moved around because you don't really have a set top guy and you're moving it around between a couple of people. I think he would definitely fit into that, you know, top tier stuff, top tier area for sure. So that's where I have him, with the possibility of being like someone who could hold it for a long period, you know, for a long period of time. And part of the reason is because I've seen him since Evolve, and it's been one of my favorite storylines, which was the for the people who don't know, it's essentially Regal, while he was scouting the Evolve wrestlers, he basically said that the future of wrestling is Austin Theory and Darby Allin are the two are the future of wrestling. And that put, you know, basically, and then at that point they put them up against a gauntlet of NXT stars. And eventually Theory wins the title. But Theory at that time was partnered up with Priscilla Presley, I think that's her name. And you know, she would help him win, and she was kind of like the one supposedly manipulating him. And when he finally wins the title, he basically tells her, leave the ring. And he gets all serious. He's like, leaves the ring. And it was like such a cold-blooded move. So he has that kind of personality that he can bring out. The NXT thing was, you know, weird, because that's when they put him into comedic roles. And it showed that he had chops to do a lot of stuff. But I think like his biggest, you know, but when he comes to the main roster, because he became essentially for a lot of people Vince McMahon's chosen, you know, person, I think that's a lot of headwind that he has to go up against. I think that he's kind of on a similar, not exactly one for one, obviously, trajectory, but a similar trajectory to The Rock, where he is in the phase of die Rocky die right now. At some point, I think he's going to be someone that at some point is, you know, and you know, this is not guaranteed, and things, you know, obviously if the booking goes completely awry, you know, nothing's guaranteed. But I think at some point, the people currently booing him now are going to come to appreciate what he can do, and then he's going to be that's when he really gets over to that next stage. And I think a lot of the stuff that they've done with him up to recently, because I remember when he was, you know, messing up trying to cash in the Money in the Bank. You know, and I remember that a lot of the people were saying, oh, you know, ha, 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 look, he's not, you know, he might have been Vince's guy, but he's not Triple H's guy. And I'm like, he's on TV, like, for 30 minutes a show. He's not going to get that much TV time if he's not Triple H's guy. But I think that was, you know, to blunt some of that. And I do think that he has, you know, I do think that there's a lot there, you know. But, you know, again, you know, in the world, things also have to – he also needs a couple lucky breaks, too. And hopefully what he does with Cena is something that really, you know, opens some people's eyes.
What do you think of the Cena Theory exchange Monday?
It was interesting, because I'm watching it, and my impression was Cena is basically talking about some stuff that he's been that you can criticize Theory for. But it felt like it was turned up to 11, you know. So, you know, he did talk about some of the, you know, some of the perceived deficiencies that he has, but it's stuff that can be worked on, and it's not like to the level that Cena was saying. So for me, it felt like a work, but then at the same time, I'm thinking for the people who really hate Theory, they're eating this up, because they're saying, you know, oh, look, he's saying exactly the way I feel about him. So I you know, I think that he does have to come back to, you know, strong after that, but we'll you know, I'd like to see what happens next. But from my point of view, I thought that it was you know, that what he was saying, like or, you know, like he's still a Theory, which is true, but it almost for me felt like he was saying it in like a dickish kind of way. Maybe to motivate
right.
him, but we'll see where we go from here.
Yeah, yep. Fair enough. Cool. Javier, great. Good hearing from you.
Yep. So hopefully things calm down at some point. Still waiting for that.
Yeah,
so,
I hope so too.
Yeah.
So, yes.
And good talking to you, Alex. I think it's been a while too. So.
Yeah, actually, I have one question for you before you go, Javier.
Shoot.
So earlier, I mentioned the possibility of MJF and Austin Theory against each other at WrestleMania. Is that totally crazy, or could you see that happening?
I could see that happening. I don't know how good of a – because I don't think MJF is going to be a face in that scenario. I don't know how good a face Theory is. That's the only thing. So I like them both as heels so much that I think that would be a I could almost see it like MJF just being the top guy in AEW forever while Theory becomes the top guy in WWE and the two never cross paths. But yeah, I think it's a possibility, but I don't know if one of them could play face. But we haven't seen Austin Theory in the face, so.
Got it.
On who would be the heel in the face there?
Huh?
You cut out, Wade.
Well,
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So who do you think, do you think they either could be the face, either could be the heel in that matchup?
Well, that's the thing. I think MJF is most likely going to be just a heel because I think that's kind of what he runs for. So I would have to say that Theory would more likely be the babyface. I just don't know, how he does as a babyface. I haven't seen an inkling of that.
Right.
While we, so and I mean, MJF kind of did, but I just think that MJF, like his shtick, it is hard to turn into a baby face. I know he could run people down, but I think that just works so much better as a heel character. So,
Alex, do you think Theory could be a lead baby face for WWE someday, like 6 years from now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. I do too. I mean, I don't have certitude, that he's going to be a top tier guy. I don't have certitude he can be a good baby face, but I certainly don't rule it out. And I can imagine that scenario. I mean, I won't get into detail because it's a little too granular, but I think there's a lead baby face in a more mature season version of Austin Theory. But it has to be reflective of his journey as a person too, that fans go along for the ride. But I think that possibility is there.
Well, and that's the thing, is it could be a situation where 3 years from now, the guy will have been on TV for however long and beaten X number of people and just gains enough respect where he's kind of a babyface by default and then just kind of leans into it. That could be what ends up happening.
Yeah. All right. Great conversation, Javier. Appreciate it.
All right. Always good to talk to you guys.
Yep. Thank you. Same here. All right, let's wrap up with just two emails that I flagged here that are subjects we haven't really – they're a little bit – they're not going to repeat territory. This is Azan who says, "Hey, Wade and Alex, how great has Michael Cole been in the Ray and Dom storyline? It's the best work Cole has done in his whole WWE run." Do you agree with that? Because I have been a fan of Cole lately. I've been probably more of a fan than average of his work for a while, even though I was – pretty tough on him for quite a while too, especially when he was, I don't know. I mean, the heel role was embarrassing, and the frosted tips was like, come on, seriously. There are, moments with him, but I think he's grown into a really good announcer, and I do agree that the Ray Dom stuff and his interplay with Barrett has been helpful to the storyline.
Yeah, completely agree. I turned and jumped on the Michael Cole bandwagon during his work with McAfee, and I thought that brought out something different in him that he's maintained even with McAfee gone. Last 2.5 to 3 years of Cole is the best he's ever been, I think.
Yep, totally agree with that. Azan also says, do you care about not – I'm sorry, that comes next. What do you think about the Viking Raiders act? Alex, any thoughts?
I mean, it's fine, I guess. It's not – top of the card, which is okay.
Yeah,
I'm glad that they still get wins. They're weird because there's like this odd thing with them where WWE seems interested in them regardless of who's booking, and they get a little bit of a push and they get some wins, and then they get in the big match and they lose, and then they kind of fade and aren't on TV, and then they come back and they do it all over again. Mm-hmm. And it's it's just like really cyclical with them. Like you could set your watch by the Viking Raiders, and it's funny that he brings that them up and I bring that up because we're like back to the upswing after their win tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't see anything long term with them. I think they are what they are and the act is fine. But like if you're asking me if they have a chance to beat the Usos, hell no.
No. Yeah, they're just a second tier role play tag team who can give you good matches. But yeah, they're all the vignettes and all the attempts to add layers to their characters. It's like I mean maybe someday they will. The Usos were very one. Edge and Christian didn't get promo time forever. You know, the Usos did just, you know, little routine stuff that got repetitive, and maybe at some point we'll know the difference between Eric and Ivar, and they'll have layers to them. But that's not the trajectory they've been on. But it doesn't mean they can't be someday. But they are, you know, pretty one dimensional, you know, WWE tag team act, which is fine to have. They're a good version of that. I'll say that. Also, he says, do you care about not having Bray Wyatt on the show tonight? Not really moving forward with the Bobby Lashley storyline. Yeah, I didn't even really cross my mind until he emailed about it, which isn't good. Alex?
I'm just glad that I didn't have to have Javier explain some of it to me. I'm to the point where I was super excited about this, and I, with the non-face turn from Uncle Howdy and them aligning without ever aligning and explaining why they're aligned, I'm lost. And I just want the Fiend back or something, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
At least I understood that.
Yeah. I don't know if they know what they're doing. I talked on the Wade Keller hotline, asked the editor about how, you know, one of the main guy who wrote for Bray is gone and was fired like a month or so back. But I haven't found out if like he was really involved in this current incarnation of Bray or not, but I just don't sense that I don't think, you know, months ago when Bray returned, they were like, yeah, this is what he's going to be doing in February or March. Like what they're doing now with him doesn't feel like the next chapter in a master plan that's gone as planned. That's frustrating. Cause like, it just seems like this should feel more planned and deliberate and heading somewhere. And it still feels like they're just winging it. And not in kind of just zigzagging somewhat haphazardly, trying to figure out what will latch on or work.
And that's,
okay.
That's okay. The problem, because the last time we talked about this when he first came, actually, the last time you and I were on together was his first appearance on SmackDown.
Oh, okay.
And if I'm remembering that right. Anyway, yeah. You know, we thought that come February, that would be like the fruition of all this, and it's March, and I still don't know what the hell's going on. So
yes. Yep. All right. Finally, David Wolf from Washington, D.C. says, has our on-site correspondent last Friday, has the WWE crowd become inured to triple threat matches? There was a sincere, unironic triple threat chant following the stupid finish to the five-way. And I think I detected boos when Piers announced Drew would face Sheamus with the winner wrestling Gunther one-on-one at Mania. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but I can't see any context where I'd welcome the thought of a triple threat. Some fans, you know, fans still cheer when they go, it's a no rules, false count anywhere match. And it's like, no, they're just doing that because they're going to walk and brawl. And nobody wants to do a regular type of job. And it's just, I don't want to dog on live wrestling crowds. People can entertain themselves how they want. But sometimes, you know, get the table chance and I don't know. So if the crowd is starting to go triple threats better than one-on-one, especially when you can have just like a real, I think, a borderline like WWE dream match with Drew and Gunther. Like, I mean, just I'm softer on it than even David is in terms of the triple threat. This is like almost an exception to my rule just because of the Sheamus Drew dynamic and the love-hate friendship and the toughness and all the battles they've been in and adding Gunther. I mean, I don't hate it, but boy, I'm not cheering it. I mean, I was like, Drew Gunther, I like that. Let's just focus on that. And now it's just, you know, the storyline is going to be, is it Drew or is it Drew and Sheamus or is it just Sheamus? And like, give me the old Drew talking about facing Gunther for the title. Anyway, Alex, any thoughts?
I think the booing for the announcement of the match next week is because the people that were there didn't get a resolution to something that they thought they were going to get a resolution to.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Hopefully that's it.
The other part of it, too, is The only reason I'm okay with the triple threat in this particular situation is it adds a level of intrigue. Like, I think if it's Gunter and McIntyre, I don't think McIntyre is going to win. So at least with the three of them, I can talk myself into them doing some kind of finish where somebody other than Gunter wins without him losing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see that. All right, Alex, anything else you want to add before we sign off here?
No, listen to the PW Torch 90s Passcast.
Yes. And oh, by the way, this is a side thing, but why did Charlotte against Shotzi just not get announced? Why are we 70 minutes into the show when Charlotte says to Pierce, give me a match, and Pierce's like, yeah, I got nothing planned for about 10 minutes of the show, so I'll figure something out, and Shotzi's all dressed and ready to go. I don't get the purpose of that. Just announce the match at the top of the show.
You know what would have been funny? If they had done like a 30-second segment after that, like they went to commercial right after that, right?
Yeah.
They come back from commercial and Adam Pearce is in the locker room talking to I don't know, Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo and whoever they were going to wrestle,
yep,
and telling them, hey, you're off the card, I gotta get Charlotte on here.
I would have liked that. My option A is, hey, Charlotte Shotzi. They've been preparing for days. You know, we booked it. They know who they're wrestling because this is a nationally broadcast show on Fox, and of course people know who they're going to wrestle days ahead of time. That would be crazy and unprofessional and shoddy for us to not have a match scheduled. But the next best scenario, if you're going to do this, is yes, bump someone else from it and or, you know, move their match to main event or next week or something. Or you know, they could have something in between where – something happens to Humberto and Angel and or whoever, you know, doesn't matter even who, where, you know, their car got broken into and their gear got stolen, or they got called away for an emergency, or someone got, you know, is under the weather. Yeah, I mean, that happens. Players, NBA players, oh, they're not going to play tonight. He's under the weather. Like, anything like that, and then have Charlotte just go, hey, I was just going to talk today, but I'm ready to wrestle. I'll do it. That's a babyface move. Step up and wrestle. And then Pierce goes, I'll go see who wants to wrestle you. And Shotzi cuts a promo going, I want this chance. I mean, yeah, I just think if you're going to do it, there's better ways to do it. It just felt weird.
Yeah, it's just contrived. It's just dumb.
Yep. All right, cool. Check out the PW Torch 90s Passcast. Search PW Torch on your podcast app. If you haven't yet, of course, search Wade Keller also. Subscribe to The Red Show and The Blue Show. That pop up on search returns. Check out our website, pwtorch.com. Most of all, go VIP. Support us. We'll give you a lot in return. We work pretty tirelessly, the whole team, getting you a ton of top shelf exclusive content for your support with the VIP membership. Check it out, pwtorch.com/govip. We'll fill you in on what membership perks are all about. Thanks, Alex. Great talking to you again.
You too, Wade. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks, everybody, for listening.